Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello.
Hello, is that Jimmy?
It is. Can you hear me?
I can. It's David here.
Is this David FN2187 calling from Australia, Sydney?
It sure is.
What's
if
going on,
if only I
can
answer beeps.
say what?
If only I can answer in like beeps, like, you know, R2 beeps or BBB8 beeps or whatever he does.
Well, David, FN2187 is Finn, and that's the joke, is that he shares your last name.
Oh, well, there you go.
Sorry, I had to explain that to the audience and you.
And me as well, actually.
That's right.
I just rolled with it.
So, let me point you towards this Excel spreadsheet that explains this joke.
Great.
How you doing,
man?
Well,
I tell you what. It's good, man. It's hot here. We've had thunders. Literally, you know, Christmas. I'm listening to like White Christmas coming home on the train. Meanwhile, it's like 35 degrees right. Outside.
35 Celsius, yeah.
35 Celsius, yeah.
Sure.
And good day. Finally back. And this has been this is the long awaited. This is very much, I think of it like the Nixon Khrushchev kind of meetings or whatever it was. Like we've really navigated to get to this point of us talking.
Oh, to this episode, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I guess we're taking a break from Green Lantern, which we'll obviously get back to, but I think a Star Wars conversation takes precedence, maybe?
Oh, definitely. Jimmy's Jedi jargon, for sure.
Jimmy's jargon, Jedi version, episode 3 on Signal of Doom. This is Jimmy. And then obviously we have FN2187 over there, right?
Yeah, FN2187, yeah, sure.
So we've both seen the film. I've seen it twice. I'm going for a third time tomorrow. You've seen it once, right?
I have seen it once, and I left it just absolutely dying to talk about it, to be honest. And I am going to go see it again. If not this weekend, I'll see it when I'm on break from basically from Friday. So I will definitely catch it again shortly, because I there's a lot to unpack. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The first time I stepped out, I was in the middle of processing it and just needed to speak to a lot of my friends are casual Star Wars fans. I have a lot of fans who are in depth, maybe as much as me, sure. If not more so.
Wow.
So do you want to get
I'm
right
a lightweight.
In? You're a lightweight.
Yeah, I'm a lightweight. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. You know, they're a huge part of me growing up and stuff. Always.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, Jimmy, before I give my version of how I get into Star Wars, I think I'd like to hear your version, because you seem so hardcore and dedicated to the cause. Like, you seem to have fought with the Rebel Alliance, so I want to hear your war story, my friend.
Taking a sip of water here. It's. I remember growing up seeing parts of Star Wars, and I didn't understand what was going on. Like, I remember crying when Chewbacca would be on screen. I remember being... My parents were like, this is where Obi-Wan dies. And, like, I didn't know who Obi-Wan was. But I remember, like, that meant a lot to me. Like, seeing someone who, when you're a kid, you're 5 years old, you trust your parents, and they tell you that, like, a hero dies. So I remember that having a big impact on me. My first real big thing is from the library in school. There was a Return of the Jedi hardcover, like, picture book. And,
cool.
Right. So I remember, like, checking that out from the library. I was like in fourth grade, and then going home and The Empire Strikes Back was on TV, and I'm like watching Empire Strikes Back, reading this like Jedi storybook, and I'm like, shit, there's a lot going on here. as like a 10-year-old.
This is some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this might be something I'll be obsessed with for the next 23 years of my life. And then like my family like gradually started understanding I was into Star Wars. I remember getting Super Star Wars on the Super Nintendo. The 16-bit system was a fun like 2D platformer, and at that point even I had not seen the film. Then I got into the films. From there, started going to comic book stores, buying the comics, and buying the books in bookstores. And growing up, those were called the dark times, David, like the early 90s, like 92 to 96.
What, just in general?
Well, yeah, right.
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, the dark times.
In Star Wars, they were, because there weren't...
Oh, just in Star Wars, because there was no product out, yeah?
The product was books, and there was no... You know, Lucas said, like, oh, I have loose plans to do prequels. So Timothy Zahn wrote a trilogy called the it's known as the Thrawn trilogy, and kind of maintained the saga. Dark Horse Comics had the license back then. It's now with Marvel again. It was with Marvel before that, and they put out a slew of comics. One was Dark Empire, which isn't very good, but it was kind of all we had back then.
Sure.
Then special editions came out, then action figures started being released again. I remember I was in a department store, saw the Darth Vader figure. They were called Red Cards. Line was called Power of the Force 2. And immediately being like, I need to have this. Prior to that, bought vintage figures from like flea markets and stuff.
Yeah, man.
And at like the age of like 8 or 10,
I'm into those figures hard. Like I don't have them now, but that's a big part of my story growing up. The figures were big to me, you know.
So I'll close on, I guess, that you know, it just kept snowballing. Now I'm here. Sure. The crazy thing with those vintage figures is that there is a sub community that like there's like controversy because people in that vintage collecting community, like they counterfeit like accessories for the figures and shit. So there's like, it's crazy shit when you go to these conventions and then like it's after hours and you just wander into a hotel like collector party and they're selling like old wrappers, like literal like fast food wrappers, and there's people like picking them up and they're like oh, how much do you want for this Burger King wrapper from 80, you know, like crazy Jesus. Stuff like that. Yeah, so
that's the kind of like, I mean, God bless them, it's capitalism, but you do wonder, don't you? Like, it's just like my Burger King wrapper from 1980. It should be worthless, really.
Sure.
You know, really, like as far as I'm concerned.
How much
you know?
These empty Pepsi cans? You know, like stuff like that. So
that just gives hoarders hope. That's a bad message to send to hoarders.
Well, I thought all that shit was junk, you know, because it is.
Yeah.
But there's still like a very small community. Like these people... For that aspect of Star Wars, this is not what we're getting into. I guess I'm microcosming, but... there's people I've met from Sydney, you know, like at these conventions, and like, oh, we traveled here because we heard that there might be a Burger King rapper, you know, like.
Are you kidding?
Kind of, yeah. Like that might be like hyperbole, but yeah, man, it's
well, I mean, we all have our vices, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I dig that, like the original 80s figures. Like, I had them growing up. And they meant a lot to me, and I kept them for a long time, probably long enough that I probably should have, if I'd really thought about it, hung on to it, because I probably gave them all away, you know, probably in the very late 80s, if not 1990 or something like that. But I mean, I was obsessed with those figures, to be honest, I know when they re-release them all again, the only reason I haven't really got into collecting them is because I just feel like it would never end, really, you know?
I know exactly what you mean. Those figures, they kind of invented that scale. It was 3 3/4 inches, and the reason they were that small was so that you could make vehicles that they could fit in. Prior to that, you had like doll sized, you know, G.I. Joes.
Yes.
Yeah. But
I remember the ones I had from you know, because when I was growing up, you know, as I mentioned before, I'm 80 years old. So
yeah.
when I was growing
you're 78,
up,
you're almost 80.
78. Yeah, right. I'm almost getting there. But when I was growing up, it was very around Christmases and stuff. Like my parents would give me, you know, the figures, and it was all around Empire Strikes Back, because that's when I kind of synced up to fully catching up with Star Wars, and I went heavy into the figures for years. And I remember, and even when we're watching the movies, like the old movies, I'll be like, oh yeah, I had the Hoth Stormtrooper. You know, I remember I had the Gamorrean Guard. You know, I remember which figures I had when I see them.
Yeah.
Just kind of recall them.
I have a Gamorrean Guard, like a carded one.
They were weak.
Yeah.
I love those. Awesome. Those are Gamorrean Guards. I don't get much of a run. They're just kind of grunting at the thing, but they were pretty cool figures.
Yeah. They get choked by Luke. Was kind of cool, right? You're like, oh shit, yeah. What's Luke doing here? Choking pig aliens? So I guess you got into Star Wars early 80s. I was not born yet. You were at the time about 50 years old back then. So
I was 50. Yeah. Right. I was on my third marriage. And I just wanted to get in touch with my childhood self.
Yeah.
But what I really appreciate though is you really get into, from what I'm hearing, you're getting into all that in the 90s, all the, what they call extended universe, and is now called Legends. Like, you were gobbling all that stuff up, and was that satisfying? Like, because I never got into that. Was that a good time?
There's a lot of it that's not good, but at the time it was kind of like it was all we had, except for the original three films, and you know.
But is it any better or worse than, say, mainstream superhero comics today? Like, you know,
you know what's a really good point, David? FN2187 is that I would say it's very similar to kind of like what DC became, where they just got too complex and convoluted. And I half agree with the decision to just like say like we're rebooting. But in the 90s, there were really good books coming out. And the Thrawn trilogy, I'll go back to that again, was kind of seen as the sequel trilogy. Though, in retrospect, that can't be made into a movie. You have a clone of Luke, you know, someone like a Jedi master stole his severed hand from Bespin and cloned him, and it was Luke with two U's. It was that character's name, and that was
really?
that was like the climax of the book, and you're like, ah, shit.
Wow.
But it had one of the best villains of all time, Grand Admiral Thrawn, and now he's been reintroduced by the same author.
In Rebels, yeah?
Well, in Rebels, but also Timothy Zahn wrote a new Thrawn book, different time period. But the respect that I think Lucasfilm has is that a lot of people fondly remember this time, for better or worse. And
sure. There
were a lot of good characters. Mara Jade, Thrawn, Talon Card, that's stuck with people.
Yeah.
You know, Han and Leia had two kids, Jason and Jaina. I remember right before the sequel trilogy was announced, I was at a convention. I think it was 2013, 2012, whatever. Some girl is dressed as Jaina Solo, and they announced a book with her, and she's like, I've been waiting my whole life for this book. This book means so much to me. This is my favorite Star Wars character. And
cool.
That character doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, because that's right. When Disney bought them, they basically wiped it all, made it all Legends, and then said, restarting, it's only the movies and Rebels, Clone Wars, and I believe what books they put out now and comics that is considered canon. Am I right?
That's correct. Yeah. They're saying basically everything we put out, books, comics, TV shows, they're all canon.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't really think that's the case.
Me either, actually. I honestly, look, I think it was a really smart thing to do, because I appreciate there was a really intense fan base in the 90s, but that simply wasn't carrying over to when Disney bought them, and there's no reason to
be
held back.
No way that you have J.J. Abrams doing his own Star Wars movie and adhering to, you know, all still that stuff, because it got really crazy towards the end. Yeah, I don't know.
That's cool. Can I just give my brief thing just for listeners? Because I am not at any level like you are, like hardcore knowledge base, but I am someone who loves the movies, like the original movies. And I mean, I did like Force Awakens. I don't really like the prequels at all, but I did suffer through them, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I don't enjoy them. I don't rewatch them. We did have them on recently when they were going to, leading up to Last Jedi, they played them all out here, just on literally on free to air TV. And you do find yourself watching it. And I really have only watched all the prequels once until we watched them again recently. And like, I didn't enjoy them in the cinemas. But the original movie, I obviously was too young for. But when did Empire come out? Was it like 81 or 82 or something?
80.
Okay, well, and it was around the same time as Raiders of the Lost Ark, wasn't it? Like, they're close.
Very close. I think Raiders may have been 81.
Yeah. Well, because Empire was like, if not my first movie I went to, it was like my second movie. And it's definitely one that I can remember, and I was in there, and I may have seen Star Wars on video, but I don't think so. And I just remember I just dove into it. Like, I was heavy into it. Just the movies, but that, and I remember being in the cinema watching Empire Strikes Back and actually missing a lot of the moments in it, you know, because I was too young, like not quite getting everything. And then, obviously, getting heavily into collecting the figures, what my parents would give me. I didn't have, like, hundreds of figures, but I had a good solid, you know, 10 or 20. And then when Return of the Jedi came out, I was so pumped. Like, as a young guy.
I'm fucking ready for this movie.
It was just everything to me. Like, I still think how fond – like, I know Empire is probably the better movie, and I enjoy it more now, but like Return of the Jedi, when it came out, I was just so pumped. I was so ready.
As a kid, I think everyone's favorite for original trilogy, people who grew up with it as a child, Return of the Jedi is like the favorite. But then as you grow up, you kind of realize that Empire is the better film.
I love the first half of Return of the Jedi. The first half of Return of the Jedi, though, I still think kicks a lot of ass, you know?
I think the whole movie kicks ass. It's a decent film. Does, but, there's flaws. Yeah. Han Solo doesn't really have a character arc. There's a lot of Muppets in the film, but
there's good times, though. There's good times.
I think you have the best Star Wars scene of all time in that, which is the redemption of Darth Vader, which is
it's awesome.
What that whole movie's about, right?
It's awesome. But I'm also, as I'm a huge Han Solo fan, like big time Han Solo fan. So going back, into the 80s, on video, I don't know how many times I watched the original trilogy. Like, I'm talking like a lot. Like, I would get so hooked on it. I would watch it again and again and again. And it's funny that I never got into the comics because I had friends who had the original, I had a friend who had like what must have been like the 80s Marvel comics. And I came to his house one day and he just had like, you know, like hundreds of comics that were Star Wars. And I was just like so jealous of it.
Like, wait, there's more? Right.
I was like, I almost couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, well, what's this? What's this? And like, he was, I think, over that period of his life. And I was just like, wasn't that close friends with him, to be honest. And
so, I was like, dude, I don't know you well enough to even begin to explain this right now.
And I remember reading them and I was just so lost because I didn't know what was going on, but I was just like, I glimpsed this world and I was just like, wow, I was really intrigued. And obviously we move into the 90s, whenever it was, before he did the prequels, Lucas released them all again in the cinemas, if you recall.
The special editions, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the first time I ever saw them in the theater.
Yeah, and I remember going to watch them with all my buddies. We're in uni and just like, you know, not that I hadn't seen all these movies like countless times, but it had probably been a few years, and going back and just really appreciating them again. At the time, I've never been one of those guys who really works up too much of a sweat about – I mean, I agree the extra scenes and stuff are kind of stupid, but they don't take away from the main film for me. You know, the main film of Star Wars – no matter what tiny stupid additions or, you know, differences Lucas makes, it doesn't really hinder the whole movie for me. The movies are too good, if you know what I mean. And I just heavily dug them. Although I think that Jabba the Hutt scene is it in New Hope?
It is in New Hope, David.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
So the reason that scene doesn't make any sense is because you already had that exact same conversation with Greedo, and now you have it again with Jabba. So that scene was shot without the idea that Jabba would look like a slug. So you have Han Solo walking around him, and there's like a behind-the-scenes thing, and they're like, well, George, how do we make him walk around? He's got this tail. George is just like, why don't you just have him step on his tail? It's like, would you really do that to this gangster who you owe, like, thousands of dollars to?
Exactly.
Yeah, so...
It really took away... That's the only one where I always think to myself, it took away them... Like, Jabba the Hutt, in my memory, from Return of the Jedi, was so kind of, like, ominous and dangerous in his own way. And, you know, as a kid, he used to kind of, like... I was kind of intrigued and fascinated by Jabba the Hutt.
He's got a frozen Han Solo on his wall as a trophy. Yeah. He's a scary
Captain Solo right
absolutely.
Where he is. Yes. You know? And he's like, you know, your Jedi mind tricks won't work on me. And he was just cool. And seeing him in that scene, he seemed really diminished. So I didn't like that bit. But nevertheless, seeing them again in cinemas just made me just love it all the more. Somehow I never got into the comics, even though I think it was because I remember everything coming out and being like, man, I kind of dig it. But then I'm sort of like, but it's not the cinema. You know, it's not the movies. And I was kind of stuck in this spot where I just couldn't quite decide, so I never got into it at all. We're making more of an effort on the Signal this week. We're doing Knights of the Old Republic Volume 1 as the trade of the week this week.
Oh, yeah, that's a fan favorite. That's actually an era for me that I kind of like, but that's my least favorite era just because it's like 3,000 years before the original movies, but it doesn't seem like anything changed. Like, they have the same level of technology and stuff, so that's not my favorite. Yeah.
I'm on issue 4, and to be honest, man, it's not good.
That was actually one of the first Star Wars books I ever, like, started collecting, but then stopped. I'll give you a recommendation. It's a prequel era book. It's called Star Wars Republic. It takes place during the Clone Wars, and it kind of puts things into perspective during that time. And as someone who was formerly a prequel, you know, at the best, like an apologist, at the worst, I was like, fuck these movies. At this point now, I've become a prequel defender to an extent.
Really?
Yeah, but these books, even before that, the comics, they have a lot of good stuff in them. And I'll send you a link to what to start
with. Yeah, man.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe that there's, like, if I can to give my interpretation, I think there's a stack of good Star Wars extended universe legends, call it what you will, out there. But I'm not a fan of the movies. I think the movies are, to be honest, poorly made. But that's not to say the story, it's kind of in the execution of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, the execution's poor. The story behind them is really cool, but the execution, like, I was watching the prequels the other day on the TV, and the amount of scenes with just Yoda just yammering on about nothing, like, it's really boring. You're like, wow, this is just dull. But I think I'm sure that a lot of the stuff around the movies was really cool, and I really can't understand why he didn't get people who were writing some of the better extended universe stuff to write the scripts for him. If you know what I mean, like, I think they lack drama.
I can go on for this for a while, but I'll just make it succinct. George Lucas originally had he didn't have all these yes men around him in the 70s and 80s. He used to have a producer. Yeah. His name was Gary Kurtz, and when they made Empire, Lucas was actually living in L.A. They were filming that movie in England, so Lucas wasn't, like, present a lot. You have a story that Lucas wrote with help from Lawrence Kasdan, who also co-wrote The Force Awakens, Return of the Jedi. He co-wrote the new Han Solo movie. So you have, like, another group of people working off of the source material that Lucas is really good with. But you have maybe finer directors and producers working independently. Lucas, after seeing the rough cut of Empire, like, freaked out, tried to recut it. It was awful. And then he, like, kind of, like, conceded that, like, all right, this is what this movie should be.
Sure.
Irvin Kershner, Gary Kurtz, you got your movie. Return of the Jedi comes along. Gary Kurtz was fired. And he right. got another guy named Richard Marquand, who was kind of like a figurehead director, like a puppet director. But yep. George Lucas was very more hands-on with that movie, and it shows.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, like the you can understand it. Like I sort of, it's so interesting to see a guy who created this thing and has made a fortune off it. Like, so no one should really feel too bad about it. Really, he's made so much money. And yet he's kind of poisoned his own well and was then eventually bought out. You know, it's just interesting. It's an interesting career arc.
It is. And he was – I don't know if he was really – like, it took him a while to do those prequels, right? And yeah. At the time, that was the most expensive independent film made because right. George Lucas was – he left the Directors Guild for – I think it was Return of the Jedi. Maybe it was Empire. So he self-financed mm-hmm. episode one. He basically took all of his money and gambled on that, which obviously paid off. But from the original movies, he built Skywalker Ranch. He started all these companies. And the prequels, sure, there's bad acting. It's wooden. It's wooden acting. You have bad dialogue. But if you really try and look past all that stuff, you really see the core, which is what you were saying, which is a really good story and a very a very clear vision that was universal through all three films. And I think for better or worse, I like that more than maybe what we're getting right now from Disney.
Fair enough. And so turning to I don't think it's such an interesting discussion because I agree with what you're saying about, like, it's really fascinating that if only he could have given the outlines to other directors, I think the prequels would be a lot better movies overall, if you know what I mean. Like, if he could have gone, here are the outlines, punched this into a script, and but instead he was, like, right over it. Like, his hands are all over them, and they're very you're right. They're very lifeless in a way, I find, watching them.
It seems like he just, like, wrote, like, one or two drafts and then just, like, went with them. And then he had all these yes men around him. The second movie, I think he had someone who came in and tried to refine the screenplay, but I don't think that showed. I think episode two is the worst Star Wars movie, period.
I'd agree with that. I thought Revenge of the Sith had some interesting moments for sure, which I, on rewatching, you still think, man, this could have been done so much better, but it's a cool moment. Like, but, you know, Revenge of the Sith, if I have to choose to watch one, would be the one I'd watch.
Sure. And I think episode one's I think I bounce back between episode one and two, or episode one and three, rather, David. Episode one kind of stands on its own, but I think episode three, for what it does for the mythos of Star Wars, I just rewatched it too, and you have scenes like, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. You know, it's really bad acting, but underneath it, you get, like, it's almost like a silent film, and it's almost like if you were watching this in another language with subtitles, it wouldn't matter, and it, like, you get the story is there.
It's got one of the funniest moments ever with it must be Revenge of the Sith where Samuel L. Jackson's character, how he dies.
It's like, so good.
It's like, I mean, turn over, so there, he's like, what? Bad. And then he just gets blasted.
Right. Anakin, he's the traitor. Anakin. Palpatine just all of a sudden goes pure fucking ape shit and shows his true colors. I love that scene though. Like, I know it's so cheesy.
It's really cheesy, but it's also kind of like, at least it's almost like, wow, they really invested in this and they didn't give a fuck about, like, what anyone thought. Like, there was no audience testing. You could tell. They're like, Lucas is like, this is the movie we're making, except it's Lucas' voice. And he just did it. Like,
this is the film I wanted to make. I'm George Lucas.
I remember he said a lot of people would like Darth Vader to have a whole movie. Well, that's just not what they're going to get. And I remember thinking, well, why not, George? Why, you know, the fans want it. Why do you insist on not doing it? Like,
he wanted to do more world building. And I think maybe we should dovetail after this into our The Last Jedi discussion. But the prequels had this immense sense of scope and this amazing world building. And the politics part could be kind of boring, but at the same time, at least there's an explanation for what's going on. Like, oh, the Republic is like, well, it's being taken down from the inside. There's a separatist movement. Like, you see the courses and causality for what's going on. And you see the rise of, you know, this dark figure, who's just opportunizing on every situation, though he manufactured them by whatever, being like the person behind the strings.
Yes. The through line is quite strong, actually.
Yeah, exactly, like, right.
You know, beneath it.
You know, so of course you have little kid Anakin, you have Jar Jar.
Anakin!
Right. Anakin, you're tearing me apart. You have, obviously, the Sand Lion. You have...
I don't want to be a Jedi.
Right. I killed all those sand people. Right. So, no, I'm very aware of the things that make that film cheesy, but...
Yeah, but I actually, to be fair, when we watched them again, I actually enjoyed Episode 1 a lot more than I remembered. Like, when we rewatched it just
absolutely.
On
TV.
Yeah, I had a lot more fun with it. I was like, actually, there's quite a lot of fun in this. Like, I forgot how good the pod racing scene is. And, like, you see the sand people. Like, the bits of it, I'm like, yeah, this is actually quite a bit of fun. There's other bits that I hate, where about the metachlorines and just some of the shit that's going on. But there's bits in it where you're like, yeah, this is actually cool. You know, like, so it's a mixed bag.
Here's another, like, really, and this is kind of silly, but if you put that movie on with... English subtitles and put the language to another language and you just kind of read the dialogue instead of hearing it being spoken, I really think it kind of puts it like a point or two above.
Should we get on to Last Jedi?
Of going from there, talking about a good base with poor execution, which are the prequels, I think The Last Jedi is amazing execution with a with a bad base.
Okay, it's so interesting. Like, I hear your point. Like, the execution is of this movie, I think I'll say this, I think it's ambitious as hell. I think it takes chances. I don't think they all work perfectly by any means, but it's a very chancy Star Wars movie that this Rian Johnson came out with, when I frankly didn't expect it to be quite so risk-taking. But when you say a bad base, do you mean just the basic sort of like how it picks up sort of 5 minutes after Force Awakens but feels completely different?
I kind of want to get into this after we talk about the positives, and I would really like to get first your initial interpretation.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I did, listeners, in the previous show, we did a 4-hour show on 2 hours on Last Jedi, and I gave it a 7.5, and I really do believe this is an ambitious movie. I had a good time watching it. About halfway through, I thought, wow, I'm really invested. But let me say this. I also felt some elements of Indian were very divided. And when it finished, I was like, yeah, I enjoyed it. And it was a very full movie and very, very busy movie. But I was also like, why do I feel so sort of, I feel like a fucking Anakin, conflicted. You know how Star Wars is always like, I sense confusion in you and all that. That's how I felt. I'm like, it's a good movie. It's a good movie by a very good director. Is it the Star Wars? I'm not one of these guys who had a script that I needed to see. You know, I have a pretty – I kind of take Star Wars how it comes. You know what I mean? I like don't sit around thinking about what's going to happen. So bits of it I liked really a lot, like the Rey character arc I had no issues with. I do find Kylo Ren a hugely underwhelming threat, and I find it hard to – reconcile with like Vader, who seems such a kick-ass badass, you know, mofo, and like the Emperor was just like so scary, and you got Kylo Ren, and I constantly feel like spoiled child, you know, whiny child.
So Anakin was like that too, but the thing that I get from Anakin was like, love it or hate it, like the fact that he thought he could keep his wife from dying, he just felt so broken. And you see the reasons he became the way he was, and finally, like, when he got there, he was just like, fuck it, my master.
Well, dude, I'm talking about original trilogy. I'm not even talking about the prequels, because I've isolated them in my mind. In the original trilogy, Darth Vader was a badass. You were scared of him.
You kind of got maybe the idea that he was being more emotional towards Return of the Jedi when, like, he...
Sure, but that's a long way down the track,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly right. So I agree with everything you're saying about Kylo Ren.
So for me, that's a... And I don't think the movie gives you a satisfying bad guy, because the Snoke scene, although I really enjoyed the battle, I was stunned.
Oh, by the way, spoilers the whole way through, obviously.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I meant to say that. Spoilers, yeah. We have this thing on the show where we do non-spoiler reviews. It pisses me off. Like, if honestly, this is the biggest spoiler review of all time. Like, don't bother coming.
I'm not about to. I mean, because I can't. Right. Some spoiler alert, folks.
Spoiler alert.
You spoiled the Star Wars for me.
You're listening to Jedi's jargon. Fucking deal. Anyway, so, yeah, like, I was real. But one thing I really liked about this movie, honestly, is a couple of times I got real surprised by what was happening. Like, for example, Snoke just dying like that. It stunned the shit out of me. I was like, didn't see that coming. And, like, the scene at the end with Luke, where he – I actually did think he might have been dead when he walked up to Leia. I actually did think that. This might be, like, a Force ghost. That thought did occur for some reason. I don't know why. Because I kept thinking, how did he get in? I thought that. I thought, how is he just here all of a sudden? And I thought maybe he's a – I just thought, like, actually, like, you know how Obi-Wan's, like, the Force ghost or something. I thought that might have been Luke. But then I immediately forgot that. And so when we actually got the reveal when he was fighting Kylo Ren – that he wasn't there, that again really surprised me. I also bought the line hook, line, and sinker that Laura Dern's character might have been a traitor, and so little moments in it, I was genuinely surprised, and I enjoy being surprised in a movie in a good way, and that's what I mean by ambition. For example, the thing with Leia, I was like, I didn't mind it at all, but I just didn't see that Leia scene
that a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, well, that was the first big surprise of the movie. That was where I went, okay, we're in for something a bit different here. Because no other Star Wars movie has taken that big a risk, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Everything else has been a bit more like, you could kind of tell it's coming. You know, even the big moments, I guess you could say I Am Your Father was a big moment. But other than I can't remember.
That's the biggest moment in Star Wars, David.
Sure, I agree. But I can't think of any other time where I'm really like, fuck, like I didn't see that coming. Whereas when this happened, I was like, when she went out of the airlock, I was like, is that it? Like, they mustn't have shot much Carrie Fisher. And Adar Akbar, RIP, poor old Adar Akbar, just buys it as well.
Fucking just completely unceremoniously kill the fan favorite character.
Actually, to be fair, I thought it was really unnecessary. Like,
to have
you know,
him
like,
in the film at all or to kill him?
No, to kill him. I love Adar Akbar. And race called? The Calamari or whatever.
The Mon Calamari, yeah.
Calamari, they're geniuses, and I love him. It's a trap. Yeah, and he just bought it, man. He bought the farm, and just needlessly, I was
in the background, and then like later on, they're like, oh, we lost some people. Admiral Akbar, the fan favorite character, he's gone.
Yeah, like, I was like,
that voice actor passed away, Tim Rose. So I think maybe that's the reason they did it. But I think that, and before I get into like the real problems I have, I think a really cool idea would have been to, instead of making this new character Vice Admiral Holdo, which is Laura Dern, have that be Akbar. Have Akbar take over. Have Akbar all these things. Have Akbar be the one who does that ultimate crazy scene, which I love, which is the kamikaze hyperspace maneuver. Have him go out the hero. Right.
That would have been great.
I think so too, David.
That would have been awesome, but unfortunately, I don't think Rian Johnson felt the same way about Admiral Akbar.
I don't think so either. And that's a part of it's almost like an out with the old and with the new.
There's a lot of that going on in this movie. This movie is very transitional, for sure. Like the entire film, it is a transitional movie. Like they're very much, and I don't mind that honestly, Jimmy. In a modern movie like 2017, they're going to make a lot more Star Wars. Like think about that. They're going to make another saga movie, you know, not next year but year after, and then they're going to make another one, and they're going to keep pumping them out. And frankly, you have to move with the times, you know, if you're running it. So I sort of don't mind they're doing it. I'm sure they're catching a lot of heat from the fan base though, because it was quite noticeable, like even Luke dying. I mean, yes, it was done well and everything, but I mean, I was like, I don't know if I would have killed off Luke so quickly, because he could, really could have been the elder mentor for a long time in these Star Wars movies, but they made that decision, and they're like, I guess they could use him as a Force ghost, you know, just as easily.
Which
so,
I'm sure, you know. Like, because J.J. Abrams is coming back for the next movie, and yeah. God, I don't even know where to start right now.
It was a satisfying ending for Luke. Can I say that? Although this is a very transitional movie, and the focus on, like, yeah. I was satisfied with it. I did think, oh, he made it, and then I'm like, but why is there a setting sun?
Binary sunset. Yeah,
yeah, I know. I said on the show, I'm going to repeat my joke from last episode. I wish he whined about power converters before he died. Like, if he'd done that, I would have been like
he just
classy.
Like looks right at the camera instead and says, yeah. "I was about to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters."
Yeah. I'd want him to really max out the line.
Like,
you know,
some
like
reason, like Force Ghost Uncle Owen, who's not even a Jedi, comes up and he's like, "Well, you can do that. We waste time with your friends when your chores are done, Luke."
Yeah, that would have been so
funny. And then, like, yeah, oh. Luke is just like, and then passes into the first. Right.
That would have been good. But sadly, we didn't get the comedic beat I was hoping for.
We did get a lot of comedy throughout the entire film, which I think broke the tension in ways that were very jarring.
Yes. Can I say, at the start of the movie, I really like Poe Dameron in this movie. I wasn't one of those people who was like, oh my God, it's the greatest acting of all time in Force Awakens.
He's
I was
my
sort of like
favorite of the new characters. Yeah.
Easily by me. In this movie, I thought that guy, Oscar Isaacs, really, really stood up to the plate and actually hit a few home runs because he needed to, because everyone's always told me what a great actor this guy is. And I'm like, I watched Force Awakens. I didn't think he rewrote the fucking book of acting. Like, it was okay, you know?
Yeah. Have you seen Drive, David?
I have seen Drive.
Yeah.
Actually, really
He's the boyfriend character to Ryan Gosling's love interest, the one from Prison. That's the first time I ever saw him. He was also in the Coen Brothers film. I forget the name of it, but he John Goodman was in it. He's a musician.
I haven't seen it, but I know the movie you're talking about.
I haven't actually seen it in the theater. I can't remember the name of the film, but that was...
He's a good actor, don't get me wrong, but he really stood up in this movie, I thought, and he needed to. And I really actually was like, I really like Poe Dameron after this. Thought he was excellent. But, can I say this? This is a big but. That first scene when he... I sort of didn't even like how just one X-Wing fighter standing up to the whole destroyer. I just think that was kind of bullshit as well. And then when he's talking to him and doing the whole patch me through joke, I thought to myself, okay, we're being quite cheesy here right at the start of the movie before any real tensions built up. I didn't really like that beat, to be honest, just dramatically, you know?
You're setting the tone for this film to be immediately silly. And you have you have the First Order. They're the new bad guys. And you have their military leader, General Hux, who can't be taken seriously. And you have...
No, he's like a joke character almost.
He's terrible.
You know?
He's fucking... I love Donald Gleason. That's the actor's name. He's great. But, like, you're reducing... Like, who's running the show here? You have an angsty late 20-year-old. You have a non-character Force user who doesn't matter. And you have General Hux. And then you have, a lieutenant or an admiral who keeps saying, like, do this, do this, do this. And so the core tenet of this movie, not to jump ahead too much, is about failure. And I guess, like, you know... General Hux is a failure because he sucks balls. That whole exchange just kept going on and on and on, and you're like, okay, what can make this even worse? Is he gonna say like a your mama joke? Oh yeah, he does. And you're like, this is the first 5 minutes of a new Star Wars movie.
And that's what I mean. It was even more so than the joke. It was where it was placed. I'm really into getting into a movie. I love a movie like Star Wars to really just drag me in and the battle's happening. why then do we have this beat that's just like a really bad joke? I'm like, we didn't need that. It was actually a pretty cool battle that then started. I didn't quite understand the need for it.
I really
just
do
a strange
like
choice.
Opening battle too. Yeah. I think that was done really well. But it's like even before you have tension to break, they're breaking the tension with a very drawn out, poor, out of place joke in Star Wars.
I'm surprised that made it past the editing. I'm surprised that made it past Disney, to be honest. Like,
Disney
the, you
wants
know,
to
Kathleen
keep doing this, man. They're saying, hey, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy does this. Let's put this in Star Wars.
Well, you know what? If it was deeper in the movie, I wouldn't have minded. It was the fact it was right up front, I think, that made it more jarring. Another, like, I overall like it. I gave it a 7.5. But another thing that was very much, okay, that joke got out of the way, and Poe Dameron did redeem himself by being, I thought, a very good part of the movie. A lot of people have issues with the casino stuff. I personally felt it was just rushed. But something that I thought that was really very Disney was BB-8 being everywhere. Man, BB-8 was everywhere. I like BB-8.
You're familiar with the term Mary Sue, right?
Yeah, I've heard it. Like, it's an all-powerful character. Or is
it's a character who has no flaws and can do everything, and that's what BB-8 is in this film.
And don't get me wrong, I get it. He's for the kids, and I love BB-8, but they were really maxing out BB-8. But I get it. It's for the kids, so the kids love BB-8.
I like
so
BB-8, too. I have the Sphero droid. I think he's cool. I mean, maybe I am just a large 33-year-old child, but... yeah,
look, I don't hate the character. I mean, but I'll tell you something I do love. See, I overall did enjoy it. I'm a huge Porgs fan. I love those Porgs, man. So I'm a hapless marketing victim.
They were great. You know? Yeah,
I love them so much. I think they're so cute and adorable. So Disney got me right where they wanted to. The 2 weeks they spent workshopping the cutest animal in the world paid off. You know,
I actually just read this. Do you know the reason that they're like everywhere in that film?
Because they want like $2 billion?
Well, I think it was like a happy accident because on Skellig Michael, which is where they filmed that, which is off the southern coast of Ireland, there's puffins there, and they couldn't move the puffins. So they had to kind of like do something with these puffins that they can't move. So we got pork.
And they are kind of similar in just, you know how they're a mixture of like penguins and everything? They are very puffin-like when you think about it, you know?
Obviously, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think they're adorable. I love them. I even love them in the trailer when he does the after Chewie does his roar,
which was dubbed differently in the film. Instead of like the ah ah, it was like a more long like ah.
Yeah.
Chewie's interactions with the Porgs too was very, that was great. Like, he's like, I'm just a hungry Wookiee. Don't stop bothering me. And then, like, you know, he's like, oh, fuck. Are you guys sentient? Like, I feel so bad right now.
Did you think that Chewie...
yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Chewie and the Falcon were both a bit underplayed in this movie? Like, we didn't get a lot of Falcon. We got the one scene, you know, where they're flying against TIE fighters, but... I did feel Chewie and the Falcon were both given kind of a backseat on this one.
Chewie was definitely given a backseat, but I think every scene he was in, it was great. One of my favorite moments, actually, was when Luke goes into his hut and, like, Chewie breaks in and Mark Hamill is like, Chewie, what are you doing here? And he's, like, you know, grunting and Wookiee's or whatever. Yeah, that's very good, David. And then Ray's like, oh, me and Chewie came here on the Falcon. And Mark Hamill goes, on the Falcon?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Where's Han? His delivery of that line, like, actually sent chills down my spine. Good. And to me, that should have been the moment that Luke realized he turned his back on his friends. And he's get the fuck out of your funk, Luke. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. But it was he kind of had the moment, then just went straight back to being a bit of a prick.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I know. They gave you the moment, but then they didn't sort of pay it off in the character, you know, scenes following. Sort of. If he'd been a prick leading up to that scene, it would have made more sense. But, yeah, he had the moment and then was like, and I'm still going to be an old hermit and fuck Chewie. Like, whatever happened to Chewie up that scene, you know.
Yeah,
like
even R2, like R2's scene. He's like, oh, my old friend R2. Yeah. We've been through so much together. I'm not coming back.
Let me forget about you for the rest of the movie.
Right. And like, you know, asshole hermit Luke, by the way, very well acted by Mark Hamill. I think Mark Hamill did a very good job with his acting. It's been a while.
I often think Yeah, I often think Mark Hamill is an extremely cheesy actor, even though a good voice actor. But I did think in this movie, he actually played it note for note very well.
He's very professional. So he took what he had and he did a very good job.
He did do a good job. It was a tricky job as well, you know?
Sure. I think all the acting in this film was great. But it was just like, you have Luke Skywalker, who's the asshole guy, who's still, like, making jokes about, like, you know, like, oh, the Resistance, I'm not going to run in there with a laser sword. And it's
I really hated that, actually, that he said laser sword, because I know that's a Lucas thing,
yeah,
to call them laser swords.
George Lucas, it's, like, funny almost, like, how much it seems like in interviews George Lucas doesn't know his own terminology. Like, Tolkien, like J.R.R. Tolkien in the Lord of the Rings verse, like, knows everything about what he's written, and George Lucas is just like, oh, you know, those spaceships that are shaped kind of like an X.
Yeah, I know. He's a man so at war with his own creation, isn't he? He's like, to call them laser swords, George Lucas pissed me off when he says it. But when Luke said it, I got to admit, in the cinema, I was like, oh, fuck you. Like, you know, like,
right.
And my girlfriend turned to me at one point during the Luke scenes, and Michelle is very much a sort of mainstream fan, if you know what I mean. Like, she likes just the mainstream stuff.
Yeah.
And she turned to me and she said, he's a real asshole. I don't like him. About Luke, you know? Like, she said, I really don't like him. And I said, yeah, he's being a prick.
That's, you know? I guess we can get to it. That's my biggest fundamental issue with this film, David, is that I don't think Luke Skywalker would do anything that he did in this film. And it goes back to, like, his whole reasoning for doing it, where he's, you know, the one who's responsible for bringing back the Jedi Order, as he was instructed to do by Yoda, a person he respected. He redeemed his father, who was already dark. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he goes, oh, I kind of felt my nephew, Ben, was going to be bad. How'd you know he was going to be bad? Oh, I kind of just felt it with the Force. Why was he turning bad? Oh, this guy Snoke made him bad. Don't worry about Snoke, because he doesn't matter. He's going to die soon. So it's like, why? Like, at least Vader, I'm going back to the prequels again, had a reasoning for going bad, kind of. This one, it's not explained very well, and it makes no goddamn fucking sense. And
well, they just say, he just says that there was, that Kylo, I mean, I do believe, I had an argument with Stuart, I believe Kylo Ren is so corrupted that any redemption is going to be tiny.
Why?
Like,
why
much
is he,
like Darth
why
Vader's
is he,
redemption, you know?
Why is he corrupted? What corrupted him?
Well, I don't know why, but I just think whatever Snoke did to him, and or, like, you know, tricks of the mind sort of thing, he was gone. And so Luke says that, but he doesn't really show it, which kind of robs the scene of, again, any real drama, because he just says it. He's just like, oh, I saw a great darkness in him.
There's no motivation. There's no impetus for that to happen. It's so out of character. And I get
I'll tell you this, Jimmy. I did like the way they did three different versions of that scene, because I actually thought that was pretty cool.
That was really cool. And again, I want to kind of preface everything I'm saying by, I think this was a good film. I don't think this was a good Star Wars film. So when they
What would you give it out of 10? I gave it 7.5.
I can't rate it.
Can't do it?
I can't do it.
Just because you're sliding around too much?
I don't know exactly what I think yet. So yeah. I'm seeing it for a third time tomorrow.
My 6.5 is very compromised. Like, it's a tricky one to rate for me.
I think it's an 8 out of 10 film, and I think it's a 5 out of 10 Star Wars film, and that's my rough – don't put that in pen. The back and forth was great, because that goes to, like, the different points of view thing, you know, like what Obi-Wan said to Luke.
Liked Kylo Ren's version, where Luke's eyes were all crazy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, this guy, he was just going to kill me. I don't know why he was going to do it, you know, like, and then he made me bad.
Imagine if Luke had said that to Han. That would have been a good scene, you know? Like,
you mean the idea that you would have our original favorite characters meet each other before they all die? Yeah, that would have been good.
I know. It would have been good, wouldn't it? But instead, well, in fairness, I think that's Harrison Ford saying, I've had just about enough. Just pay me out.
Well, he came back under two conditions. Just to go on a tangent real quick. Number one, let me get two more Indiana Jones films, which are happening. Sure. The reason for that is he makes more money from residuals from those films. But number two, I really think for a long time he said he hated Star Wars. And if you know, he wanted his character to die in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Which
makes
sense.
Yeah, he was going to die.
Yeah.
He was going
to
die.
Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan wanted to write it that way, and George Lucas was like, no, we can't do that. So for the
second half... I'm kind of glad he didn't.
Sure. We have all this other material that was great because of it, but it did make sense for him to die in that movie on its own.
For
and
sure.
In this film, I think that was a very moving scene when he's killed by his son.
Yes,
I wish
it worked.
I wish he had met Luke Skywalker one more time. Didn't happen. But seeing Luke interact with Leia, even though it was projection or whatever, was amazing. I think that was very touching. And
I also enjoyed in Force Awakens Harrison's moments with Carrie Fisher too. I thought that was good.
That was very good. Those three actors were really good friends, and especially the relationship between Mark and Carrie was he gets so worked up talking about working with her, and he says still he can't talk about her in past tense because he thinks she's still here. So
that's fair enough.
Yeah. All right, where were we?
So we're sort of discussing a lot of stuff about Kylo Ren. Now, what I've got a question for you. What did you think of the Snoke scene?
I liked it on its own. I think you should have had that scene in the first film because that would have made more sense there instead of thinking that they're building up this new, like, Emperor character.
Yeah.
Have him immediately die, you'd be like, oh, fuck, well, this is not what I was expecting. Instead, you have this, like, whole mystery thing that's been propagated not just by the fan base. I think also Disney has been propagating it.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan Johnson even tweeted, like, images of him, like, wearing a T-shirt that says, your Snoke theory is wrong.
there isn't one.
There isn't one, right.
There's no truth. You know, it's really like the Sphinx without a secret sort of thing. Like, there is no – we never wrote it down. You know what I mean? Like...
Right. So to that effect, I think Ryan Johnson was really trying to – instead of dealing with the mysteries that J.J. Abrams set up, which is like J.J. is really good at setting up mysteries and then letting other people deal with it like he did with Lost, right?
Walking away and going, good luck.
Yeah, have fun, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse. He's like, yeah, have fun with this, Ryan Johnson. And Ryan was just like, no, that's not what I want to do. So, however.
Probably a clever move, though, you know, creatively. Ryan Johnson, I've got to say, He has some balls as a creator. I enjoyed Brick. I really liked Brick. I love Looper.
I love Looper.
Yeah. I've got to say this about Ryan Johnson, and this is something the fanboys out there who are idiots, really, you know, with their petitions. This is a director who wasn't afraid to make his own choices, and that should be applauded in an environment where we have movies like Justice League that have so little ambition. He actually had a lot of ambition and a fair bit of balls to do what he did, to deliberately go the other way. You know, when JJ set something up, he didn't play into it. He did his own thing. That does take some courage, you know?
I do appreciate that. And my issue isn't just that everything was subverted, my expectations. That's not my issue with it. My issue is with some logical things that we might not be able to get into. But
You can say them, dude. I don't mind.
Sure, but let me. My main point is that JJ is coming back with Episode 9, and is he going to undo everything Ryan Johnson did? You know,
I'm fascinated. To be honest, man, I really want to watch Force Awakens again because I had a good time with it. But it's such a different movie. I have no idea how JJ what he will do. You know, it really is a mystery.
He's such
a different filmmaker. He's just so different to Ryan Johnson. They're just completely different.
He's almost like a Steven Spielberg 2.0, where
movies are
like full of wonderment and excitement. Ryan Johnson's a more cerebral director. This is a character film. And yes. I think, aside from how well acted it was, I just ultimately disagree with every character change. Going back to the question you asked me, I do like that scene. I think that was great when Snoke gets torn apart by Kylo. I actually, I knew that was going to happen because I read every single spoiler beforehand. But
oh, did you really?
Oh my God, I was all out.
I walked in fresh as a daisy. I actually had no idea. I knew that it critically was doing very well. When I walked in, I wasn't even aware that there was this backlash because but I knew that it was, I was like, this is the greatest Star Wars movie, you know, that kind of stuff that was coming out right when it came out. Like before the critical backlash, there was the critics going, oh, this is the greatest Star Wars of all time. And I was like, oh, cool, then it's going to be good. And I walked in knowing nothing about story, not even knowing that all the people on the internet were going to start complaining. And Jesus Christ, dude, I think that's the way to watch a movie. Because so many of the DC movies, I fucking hate knowing anything. You know what I mean? Like, give me a movie where I can walk in fresh, please.
I appreciate that. As a Star Wars fan, I need to know everything as soon as I can. I actually had like hours-long conversations with a friend who saw this before I could because he had the privilege to. Yeah. And
does that wreck it for you, though, when you're watching it? Like, if you know Snoke's going to die, you know what I mean?
I've been doing this since episode one, so I don't think it does ruin it for me because, like, even though I know about it, I still haven't experienced it. And,
I hear you.
So it's different.
It's cool, though.
Sure. But yeah, that whole scene when Snoke got torn apart, I actually yelled out. I was like, Jesus Christ, because that was just so fucking cool, you know? And seeing immediately like Rey and Kylo going back to back and fighting the Praetorian guards was awesome. And then Rey.
I thought it was a great fight scene.
It was very good.
Stu was saying, I was saying, where are the fucking Knights of Ren? And he said, and correct me if this is wrong or right.
And I think I know what you're going to say, but go for it. I'm sorry, David.
Well, Stu had a theory that the Praetorian guards were the Knights of Ren. And I'm like, aren't they Kylo's, like, you know, associates? Why would they be fighting him?
Yeah, I think that's his posse. I don't think, because if you look at that scene in The Force Awakens, you see a lot of them have, like, not to say you can't have, like, a melee weapon and a blaster, but it. No, I don't think that was the Knights of Ren. And I don't think he would destroy the Knights of Ren. Users?
Are the Knights of Ren Force users? Like, are they like...
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, because if they're... Yeah, this is where I get confused. Like, I mean, if they're Padawans, like he was, I guess, a Padawan, using the old terminology, and he you know, went away with them, wouldn't they also be sort of trainees as well?
I assume that the Knights of Ren were... Kylo kind of rallied some of the Luke said that there were 12 others, you know, that he was training. I assumed they were those characters. I assumed we would get an explanation to.
But we didn't. We got zero, man.
We got zero. We got less than zero to reference a Bret Easton Ellis novel that I love. But
good novel. Oh, great. And a fairly interesting movie as well. Yeah,
it's very good.
I wonder what Bret Easton Ellis thinks of this movie.
Let's find out. I'm sure he would write Patrick Bateman into it somehow. But we got no explanation for that. And if that was the Knights of Ren, man, I don't know where this next movie's going
to
go.
I'm sure JJ will be relied on to make that not the Knights of Ren. Do you know what I mean? I think JJ is going to give us a fairly more conventional version of Star Wars when Episode 9 rolls around somehow. I don't think he's got anything else in him other than to do that, really.
That's fine. You know? I don't necessarily want conventional Star Wars. Like, I really like the chances that this film took, but it's just really hard to come to terms with some of it, maybe. So
yeah, perhaps it will be one of these movies where it's very transitional, Jimmy. Like, it's super a transitional movie. And perhaps it will grow in audience favor as the years go on and as there are more and more Star Wars movies. We're only at the second one. I mean, I guess third if you include Rogue One.
Second saga film.
Yeah, but only the second one since, you know, it's been reborn after 20 years. And in 10 years' time, there's going to be like five or more saga movies. And, you know, then you can start placing things. We're really at the dawn of the new age still. Like, Disney are just really starting to mint those checks. Give it a bit more time for them to crank out more movies, and you might look back at this movie and go, it was actually a really interesting moment for Star Wars, sort of thing.
I'll acquiesce to that point that I don't know where they're going. And you could be right that I could look back on this and say, like, oh my God, of course that was right the whole time. But my fear is that I don't know where they're going, and I don't think Disney knows where they're going either. And that's my fear.
I tell you a scene I couldn't stand. It just made me, like, it's the Spielberg sense of wonder scene at the end with the farm boy, or, you know, the kid in the stables.
Broom boy is what he's being called.
Stu said that he called the broom with the force. Is that right?
That is right.
That sucks so hard. And then he looked up at the stars, and the only thing that was missing was the Disney castle, you know, appearing in the stars.
And then Tinkerbell just, like, winking at the audience saying, it's going to be right, folks.
I just can't stand it where they're really like, oh, yeah, check it out. Like, it's Disney. Like, and I like Disney, but that in the movie, that made me roll my eyes. And I'm glad I didn't see that he did a force pull on the fucking broomstick, because that is just so ridiculous.
I get the point of that, because it's showing that there's other force users out there, which makes sense. But
what a ham-fisted way to show it, man. What a ham-fisted way to show it.
I mean, like, I'm going to reference the prequels again, but I have to, because this is established canon that you have to acknowledge. Force user kids have existed forever. And
Anakin was one.
Yeah, the Jedi, like, basically found them and then went to their parents and said, hey, We have carte blanche here. Like, we're going to take your children.
Yeah, I just didn't like that. For me, it's not so much the story, dude, at all. It's the way the scene is shot. I didn't like it. I thought it was real. This is before I even knew that he'd force pull the fucking broom. I didn't actually notice that.
And I just like, thought now it was, that you know that, you're like doubling down on your...
I'm just even more annoyed to find that out. I just thought it was really cheesy. And I almost wish they had done the fucking castle in the sky to prove my point. Because it really is like, don't worry, kids. You know, and like, he just like...
You look in the constellation, you see Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah, I said what would have been, like, way darker is this kid who's got a fucking ring that's so obviously connected to the Resistance, if some troops had just come along and, like, shot him at the end of the film.
Oh, they're called Rebels now, David.
Yeah, Rebels, yeah. That would have been, like, such a hardcore ending, like, just to take the kid out and the ring goes down in blood. I would have been like, oh, yeah, the war's on.
That would have actually fit the tone of the film so much more, right?
Like, I know.
Like, you know, that's the thing is that this movie, like, I don't think it could figure out what it was trying to convey. And I get the core.
This wasn't a movie about kids staring at the stars wistfully at all. No, and that's why I thought it was such a stupid.
Yeah, this movie was about being a failure. It was in it. You know, we're both nihilists, I think we've discussed a degree. This movie was all about nihilism. Nothing matters. Yeah. And that's just not what I guess I thought I wanted from a Star Wars movie.
That's not the vibe of normal Star Wars in terms of the movies, you know? That's not normally the vibe.
Correct.
I was going to say... Can I also say the Resistance/Rebellion is really struggling for numbers? Like, did you notice it was like about like 15 people on those?
Yeah, it's like 15, 20 people on the the speeders at the end of the movie.
If this was a real war, the First Order has won the war, and then they're mopping up the remnants. That's what's actually the scenario. If you want to really be serious about it, like, the First Order has won this war. Like, you know, they are mopping up the absolute specks on the floor now. But supposed to believe, you know, that there's all this hope, but I'm like, it's actually a pretty hopeless situation, really, if you looked at it objectively.
I get the themes that Rian Johnson were going for, but I'm just going to, for a minute, go with how does this make any sense? So you have the Republic base, which is basically like Washington, D.C., was destroyed. But, like, what about the worlds that they governed? You know, they say, like, we have allies somewhere. Where are allies?
In the Outer Rim.
Which is where the First Order lives. Why would the Resistance go out to the Outer Rim, which is first... And this is me coming from a more, you know, I've read the fucking books type of territory. Which
it can't have been a very stable government to be overthrown so quickly, you know? Like, really.
Right. Like, how did this coup happen? What's going on Coruscant? You know, there's like the core worlds. I think when you see that scene in The Force Awakens and you see the Republic being destroyed, I think J.J. Abrams was using a metaphor that he's destroying the prequels with that. And I think he wanted that to be Coruscant. And they changed it to it's called Hosnian Prime. But that means Coruscant's still there, unless it was destroyed later by a not a rogue, but like a Imperial remnant. Where are they getting their money from, David? How are they building these weapons?
No, I agree with you. The original movies as well were also quite poor at explaining the political situation. I know the extended universe goes into depth, but you were never really sure of, like, I was always like, so knocking out the Death Star beat the Empire? Really? And then it didn't, and then it did. And it's like, I could never really keep up with who was on top. And in this one, you're just like, we killed Starkiller Base. Okay, big win. No, they're actually, there's only a few of them left. And it's like 5 minutes later, I'm like, what? Like, it was very jarring in terms of Star Wars' movies. The prequels, maybe not, but the original trilogy and the two movies so far are very poor at explaining the political situation of the world or the universe. Bad at it.
Yeah, I can do this without even referencing books. So in the original film, it doesn't matter because it's just set up that there's an evil empire and that there's rebels. Sure. And you have references in the film, like Tarkin says, like, oh, the Old Republic, the Senate's gone. And that, like, from that statement, you get like the idea that, like, oh, there was a good government that ruled everything that became a bad government.
And it's long gone. You know what I mean?
Sure. And you have people who still are trying to protect these ideals. Fine. Sure. You have in the Empire Strikes Back, you see like a planet, which is, Bespin Cloud City, who's like kind of self-governing. And then you see the Empire kind of take that over when Darth Vader goes there. And he's like, oh, it would really suck, Lando, if I had to leave a garrison here. That's a very bad Darth Vader. And then by the third movie, it kind of didn't matter because like you saw that the Imperials were just going wherever they wanted and it was just assumed. Prequels explain the causes and the reasons that happened. Fine, you don't necessarily need that. These new movies, it's established.
They got no idea.
It's established at the end of Return of the Jedi, David, that the Empire lost, that there's a new Republic that came into play that you would assume would be just as big as the Empire, and instead of seeing that like become decrepit from within or seeing like an offshoot, it's all of a sudden the Empire is still there. Where? Why? How?
It doesn't make sense, man.
What the fuck?
Like even Leia in Force Awakens is supposedly leader of the Resistance. I'm like, you're leader of the Resistance, but is there still a government? I don't understand. You're either in the government or you're a member of the Resistance, but there's also the First Order. It was very poorly explained, and I was sort of like, I actually thought to myself, this is going to sound super geeky, but I actually feel it diminishes my enjoyment because I have no idea what's happening in terms of the actual galaxy and who's even governing. It seems like complete chaos.
Right. These are holes that are filled in. There's a really good book called Bloodline that's all about Leia and why they're
I should read it because I'd probably enjoy it because I would like to get that information.
Right. It's called by Christine Golden.
The one that the character that Laura Dern plays is in as well? Is she in that?
I don't believe so. She might be. I read it when it came out about 2 years ago. I don't recall. That's a really good question. But it does kind of explain the political situation, but they couldn't go far enough because I think Rian Johnson said, like, oh, wait a second, don't go this far because I might explain that. And then he didn't. So
he didn't. You didn't. He gave a very – I heard someone describe it as very Battlestar Galactica-y, how they were constantly on the run.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I love Battlestar Galactica, by the way, you know, the new series. And he did go for that tone, in fairness to him. He did go for that tone, as in they're on the run. They're on the run the whole movie. So there's really no broader story. They're just constantly on the run from a far superior force. It's just picking them off. And then finally that battle does get resolved, but it doesn't really answer any of the wider questions about the world, you know?
Sure. And you see why the Cylons kind of became the superpower in that show. And, you see, I guess, the First Order do it by blowing up four planets, but there's way more than four planets in Star Wars. And then they furthermore blow up that base that could do that, but they're still out there. Like,
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what comes from here. Like, I didn't hate this movie, Jimmy. Like, I've got my criticisms of it. I don't love it, though. You know, like, it's not, I don't think it's anything as good as, like, Empire or Return of the Jedi, in my estimation, or The New Hope, you know. None of these movies, it's not as good as any of those movies to me. It's a very different movie to Force Awakens. I feel like watching Force Awakens again. I don't know. It's a good movie, but it's not like I'm sort of like, I'll be interested to see what JJ does. I think he's got his work cut out for him, you know?
It's like JJ set up bowling pins for Rian Johnson to knock down, and Rian Johnson just went to a separate lane and bowled against other bowling pins. So
yeah,
maybe JJ will knock down those own pins. I'll tell you, every time I've seen it twice, excuse me, every time I walk out of this movie, I feel emotionally drained, and I don't know what to think. So again, seeing it.
I've got a question. What did you think about C-3PO's red arm now being back to a normal arm? Because that really pissed me off in Force Awakens, right, and suddenly he's back to the normal arm. You know?
It seems like nothing happened between the end of The Force Awakens, so his arm's gone. There's actually, David, it's a one-shot comic. It's a C-3PO Marvel book that came out maybe 2 years ago. Actually, I can probably send you the digital code for that if you want to read it.
I'd be interested.
It explains the red arm, but it's not built upon that tenet. It's a very good... I don't know how interested you are with like android sentience and like what that means, and is AI real and that kind of stuff.
Not more than anything, a passing interest, but I don't mind C-3PO. I wouldn't mind finding out how he got the arm.
It goes really deep into what it means to be a droid, and can droids maintain friendships, and do droids have memories. It's a really good book.
In Star Wars, I'm a bit interested in that. Sometimes I do think that about C-3PO. Like, I always liked that there's the evil droids, like the evil BB-8 droid that saw him on, you know, a Snoke ship.
Well, that droid's like, just programmed to be a part of the First Order. Though we do kind of have evil droids, like IG-88 from The Empire Strikes Back is a bounty hunter.
About the bounty hunter. I had the figure, man. I love that droid. He should make a fucking comeback. He should make a fucking comeback.
For sure. And it's like, why does a droid need to hunt bounties? Like, do you need to eat? Like,
Dude, I love that droid. In my mind, he does need to kill. He's a killer droid, man. He just kills. And he enjoys bounties. I don't know. He likes to make a profession out of it.
I really appreciate that kind of aspect to Star Wars, and I'll send you the code for that. But yeah, the red arm's just gone. Doesn't matter.
I hated that the JJ gave it a red arm just so he could get the merchandising off it. I just thought it was so fucking lame. And not to explain it to, just be like, wow, this is something that happened in the 20 years, but we're never going to fucking tell you. Like, fuck you.
There is precedent for that, though, David. Not to get too nerdy, but in every Star Wars episode, there's a piece of C-3PO that's different. So in the original, we had his leg was silver. In Empire Strikes Back, you have him be just completely taken apart. In Return of the Jedi, you have his eye being eaten out by Salacious Crumb. Episode 1, you have him without skin. Episode 2, you have his head fall off. Episode 3, shit, I've just...
That is cool, I guess. I do like the one where... I think it's in 1 where doesn't Anakin build him?
Yeah, absolutely. That's episode 1.
Yeah, I thought that was cool that they showed him building the droid. I thought that was pretty cool. I always think it must be weird later on for Darth Vader, like, to be like, oh, there are my droids that I built.
There's like a fan theory out there, which obviously didn't, you know, this was not the intention, but in Empire Strikes Back, there's a part where Boba Fett's firing on Chewbacca on Bespin, and C-3PO is like on his back, and Vader takes Boba Fett's arm and just like pushes it down as he's firing, and people assume that he remembers that he built this droid.
That's not the case.
But it's cool to think sometimes.
One of my favorite scenes in Star Wars is Empire Strikes Back, where Han walks in the thing and sees Darth Vader and just blasts him. Oh, I love that scene.
Fucking instinct. I love that. Obviously, it's Vader's awesome. Just like, oh, nope. Let me stop you right there.
But I like the way he at least tried. You know, it's like he goes Vader and just tries to shoot him.
Han Solo's a fighter to the end, man. I love Han Solo.
I dug that. That's one of my favorite bits. Yeah, I mean, look, we could circle forever around Last Jedi, but I think it is a movie that when JJ's next one comes out, it's going to be very interesting. I'm also very interested and would love to get your opinion on the Han Solo prequel movie, Jimmy.
Hey, where I was actually about to ask you about that.
I'm a huge Han Solo fan, and I am a huge Ron Howard fan, actually, and I'm quite confident Ron Howard will turn out a very, very good movie. So I am excited. I am a bit bummed that a different person has to play Han Solo just due to age and everything, but I'm down for the ride. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm going to get in this film and enjoy it. Fuck it, you know?
I will say this. Now, the funny thing is I can never remember this actor's name. It's Alden...
Eckenrock or something.
Alden Einrich?
Something like that, man. Yeah, I've never seen him in anything.
He doesn't, me neither. He doesn't really look like Harrison Ford, but I don't think that's important. I think as long as, so Lawrence Kasdan wrote this movie with his son, so I think Lawrence
that's
Kasdan,
cool. That's
yeah,
cool.
I think he gets the character of Han Solo more than anyone else. I am kind of weirded out by the fact that Lucasfilm now has fired three directors for three, or well, four technically, because Chris Miller and Phil Lord were the directors for the Han Solo movie.
True, yeah. And Colin Trevorrow.
They fired Colin Trevorrow, and they fired, it was the guy who did the Fantastic Four movie. So like,
Josh Trank.
Josh Trank, right. He was supposed to.
Apparently, he had a lot of problems, though. He had a lot of problems.
A lot of, like, problems, yeah. But I can appreciate the. So apparently, Lawrence Kasdan really rallied for Lord and Miller to direct this. Then, basically, halfway through shooting, he's like, man, this is not what I really wanted. And I have a very clear vision, and this is my last Star Wars movie. So I'm sorry. And I think he went to Kathleen Kennedy, and she was just like, and they all kind of agreed. I do love Ron Howard.
I trusted Ron Howard, though. Ron Howard, man, he's a master filmmaker, as far as I'm concerned.
Apollo 13, Cocoon.
Yeah. Backdraft. Yeah. Fucking the list goes on with Ron Howard.
I might get some flack for this. I love Willow.
Willow's fine. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the hugest fan. Ron Howard, people who question Ron Howard should take a look through his IMDb and realize how many fucking great movies the guy's directed. A lot. A lot more than most directors who are far more sort of like they court the publicity more. Ron Howard doesn't really court publicity. He just makes good movies.
He does make good movies. And I think he's very invested into making this a good film. I'm a big fan of Childish Gambino. Wait a second. No, hold on.
Donald Glover,
right.
I'm looking forward to his interpretation of Lando. I'm sure he can do a very good job of Lando. I love Lando, so I'm down for that.
There was actually a series of books. It's by an author. Her name was A.C. Crispin. She passed, but she wrote a Han Solo trilogy that, in my mind, was like the foundation of Han Solo. They probably won't take anything from that, but I'm excited to see a Han Solo doing Han Solo shit. I don't want him to get to a point at the end of this movie where he's like, I don't want to see him do anything good in this movie. I want to see him be a scoundrel the whole way through, because that will take away from his character arc in the originals. But in Star Wars, David, I'll tell you, my favorite stuff is the non-force users. I love the pilots. I love the smugglers.
Dude, me too, dude. We are blood brothers, because I am on the same page with you 1,000% on that.
Oh, cool. I'm going to say 2,000%.
I am so down on any shit to do with bounty hunters, Han Solo, smugglers, the TIE fighter pilots. Please give it up for the TIE fighter pilots. I love those guys.
Have you ever played that game, TIE Fighter?
No, I haven't, actually. I've got Battlefront, and you get to fly around sometimes in that, but I've never played the X-Wing and TIE Fighter game badly.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But, yeah.
I'm just a huge TIE Fighter fan. I love those fucking TIE Fighters, and I had it as a kid, the black figures, and I've always dug those guys. And they get a bad rap. I never get any moments. Well, like, I wish they would do a film with a guy who was a TIE Fighter pilot. Like,
dude,
it'd be pretty.
For sure. There's books. I can recommend one.
I'd be interested. No, but when you said non-force users, it's kind of not the dumb thing to admit it, but I am 1,000% agree with you. Like, I'm one of those guys, I want the Bounty Hunter movie. You know what I mean? Like, for sure. I'd be down for that. My cover photo on Facebook right now is that, I don't know what his name is, the Lizard Bounty Hunter?
Bosk.
You know the one?
Yeah.
Bosk.
He's a Trandoshan, David.
Cool. Well, Trandoshan, I also just think he's cool.
He's great. You know, you have like the one moment where like they're like bounty hunters. We don't need that scum. And he looks down and he's just like snarls.
And he's got his foot. His foot's like on the edge of the thing.
Right. He's like, hey, I don't respect you. Don't fuck with me. You know, yeah, that's like the vibe I got from that. And I'm excited to see. I don't think this is going to be like a mentally groundbreaking Star Wars film. I think it's going to be awesome. I have high hopes for it, and I'm very excited for the Han Solo movie.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Jimmy, because so am I. Man, I think we've put together a pretty fucking compact, sweet little episode about Last Jedi and Star Wars in general.
I think so, too. I told you earlier that I could go on and on, but, you know, we'll do follow-ups if you want to hear more opinions. Yeah,
1,000%.
Sure,
Send me those links. Give me the titles, like, not now, but the titles of those Han Solo books, and maybe just a selection of comics. You don't have to do it tonight, but a selection of comics, because Stu and I are really interested, because so far, Knights of the Old Republic Volume 1 is not doing it for me. I'm finding it very, actually, boring.
I really just want to say to you, after you do your episode on that, just stop, because it's not worth it, man.
Oh, we're not going to do any more of Knights of the Old Republic, but we will do other comics. We'll do other comics from Star Wars if they're recommended and stuff. Like, so yeah, if you've got some cool suggestions, flick them to me and Stu, because we've got no idea when it comes to extended universe stuff. We're sort of flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got a lot of advice for you. So,
life advice.
Just general life advice, which I would not recommend taking from me. But if you want Star Wars advice, you know, I got you, buddy.
All right. Awesome.
How to reach out to you? At Signal of Doom, at Red Lantern something on Twitter?
Yeah, on Twitter at Red Lantern 2051. Follow Signal of Doom on Facebook. We've got the page there. We've also got a Twitter account, Signal of Doom. Yeah, but follow those things. Enjoy it. And we put the show out weekly. We just put out a huge episode. What I love is, Jimmy, we did 2 hours on Last Jedi that was so different to the hour and a half we've just done, but also enjoyable. Like, I just love getting the different viewpoints. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I hope I wasn't too much of a downer on this, because I just kind of want to conclude. I love Star Wars. I'm not going to, you know, and that was a really good epilogue that I am looking forward to Han Solo, and I am looking forward to more Star Wars films. So
your love of the Star Wars franchise comes through, and also your knowledge, which is really cool, I think. You know, it's all good, man. Hey, you're allowed to have a critical opinion on a movie, for fuck's sake. Like, these are, you know, they're products like any other. You're allowed to make comments and pass judgment. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you, David. That kind of absolves me.
You are absolved, my son.
Can I do a shout out for Bruce Wayne's World real quick?
Of course. Please shout out to Bruce Wayne.
So if you like comics and if you like Batman, check out Bruce Wayne's World. It's a part of the Batman Universe podcast network. You can tweet to me at Bruce Wayne World. There's no S at the end of Wayne's, because Twitter doesn't allow that many characters. If you like that show, there's a co-host I have. His name is Joe. He does the Facebook page.
If you like Joe Wappo, he's involved.
If you like Joe Wappo and want to help him solve crimes, reach out to him on the Facebook page. Just search for Bruce Wayne's World. And check out the other Batman Universe stuff. It's pretty good, right, David?
Oh, Batman Universe is excellent. Like, I mean, that's how I fell into this. I remember many years ago, or not many, like 2 or 3 years ago, falling in love with Stella's show, Batgirl the Oracle.
Yeah, and I'm friends with plenty. It's a good show.
Friends with plenty of people on Batman Universe. They're a great community and creators. You've got Dusty running the whole thing, right up the top, the Puppet Master. You know what I mean? And just it all runs like clockwork.
Pulling the strings,
he's making the moves that matter in the distant darkness. You know, it's all happening. He's like, actually, you know who he's like? Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond is how I picture him, sort of thing. You
just
know,
like, hey,
behind the screen.
I love this stuff, but I just can't do it on my own.
Yeah, I need a younger mentor. And secretly, he just wants to do it all himself again. You know, get back into the fray.
Right, just not physically able, because Dustin's 120 years old. Is that correct?
He's got a cane like Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond and everything. Yeah, graying hair. It's my mental image. I'm 80. I'm allowed to make these jokes.
Yeah, you can. Way to make fun of your elders.
Yeah. I'm like Davros, if you know Doctor Who.
I do know Doctor Who. Do you know Doctor Who?
I do. No,
let's do a Doctor Who Christmas episode, maybe. Well, or just at least maybe talk about that. Well, I don't want to take too much from you and Stu, because I'm sure you'll talk about that. So
we've got plenty of stuff, man. Don't worry. The engine keeps churning. So follow all those things, kids. Have fun. Enjoy Star Wars. And party on.
Party on, David. Talk to you later, buddy.
It's me. Bye.
Bye.